All right, good morning, everyone. We are getting started with the March 23rd, 2023 Transportation Finance Policy Committee meeting. We do have a quorum, and Representative Petersburg, would you like to move the minutes from last night?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move the minutes of last night with one exception. I believe Nolan West was there for a little bit at the beginning of the meeting. Other than that, it looks good.
We will make note of that amended. So Representative Petersburg moves the minutes as amended for March 22nd, 2023. All those in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? The motion prevails. All right. We are not doing House File 1322 today because we still don't have a fiscal note. So that is not happening today. We move to House File 2882. So Chair Hornstein, you have TNC. Bill, we will. This bill will be laid over for possible consideration in a future omnibus. So if that's your motion, Chair Hornstein, you can begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is my motion. House File 282 is, I would consider, another tool in our toolbox. Can you hear me okay, Mr. Chair?
Not really.
Huh. Not like the Senate here.
I think you're okay. Just be a little louder
okay.
If you could.
Thank All
you.
Right.
There you go.
No one's ever accused me of not being loud enough.
I know. Who knew?
All right, Mr. Chair, members, House File 282 is one of several bills we have under consideration to raise new revenue for transportation. And the reason this is before us is that while we do have some options for general fund money, we also need to have long-term, dedicated, sustainable, reliable money for transportation. And we're looking at new and innovative sources to accomplish that. This bill really has its origins three years ago. I want to point out Ms. Donahoe from the Transportation Alliance first brought this to my attention as a possibility. We were talking about this, I said, something like 3 years ago, and she said, maybe even longer. So we were looking at the time at legislation that Massachusetts had passed related to transportation network company assessments. Since then, Colorado has done it. I know a number of municipalities have done it. And it has worked out well as a source, a potentially growing source of revenue for transportation. We don't have a fiscal note. But what I can tell you is in other states, this is raising anywhere from $10 to $25 million per year. Not a minor sum, but we have some other revenue raisers that we'll talk about today that are larger. I've had the opportunity to talk to Uber and Lyft about this, and we're going to continue our very positive and constructive conversations. But generally, the way this works is that someone like me that uses Lyft would be, and you know, Uber. Sorry, sometimes I do that too. But someone that uses one of these TNCs the passenger would be assessed a fee. And I think there's different ways of doing this. And I'm open to conversations again with the TNC companies. I think a flat fee is preferable to sort of this formulaic. Piece we have in the bill. And then the other thing I wanted to call the committee's attention to, and you, Mr. Chair, is that we do want to incent more people riding in groups rather than individuals, and so there's a little bit of a break for people in that situation. So this is an important and growing part of our transportation regimen, and again, as you know, I don't drive, and so I rely on transit, bike, and walking, and increasingly this winter, I would say, Mr. Chair, Lyft. So with that, I know we have a couple of people that want to testify, and I'm happy to answer questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Moving on to testifiers. The first testifier is Margaret Donahoe, followed by Peter Wiginius. Welcome back, Ms. Donahoe. Thank you for being here. If you state your name for the record, please, and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Margaret Donahoe. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Transportation Alliance. Thank you for this opportunity to testify in support of House File 2882. We appreciate having, as the Chair said, more tools in the toolbox as we face the huge funding shortfall that we have for transportation in this state. More and more states and municipalities are implementing fees on rides provided through TNCs in an effort to deal with the cost of wear and tear on the roads and growing congestion. 7 major cities and 13 states have some type of fee or tax on TNC trips. Some states charge a percentage of the trip charge, while others use a straight dollar amount, for example, 50 cents per trip. The revenue is used for a variety of purposes. Some states use the revenue to support transit systems, while others remit funds to cities and towns where the rides originated. As states, local governments, and transit systems all struggle to maintain and improve the transportation system, existing user fees will need to be adjusted, while new user fees will need to be implemented. The TNC fees being charged in other states and cities are certainly not putting those services out of business. People continue to use these services and to pay the additional fee that allows for increased investments in the roads that TNC providers rely on, and to allow transit systems to work hand in hand with TNC providers to get people to and from transit services in a partnership that helps both types of service. Ongoing dedicated revenue is critical for meeting the ongoing needs of Minnesota's transportation system. We urge inclusion of this TNC fee in a comprehensive transportation funding package that provides enough new funding to make a difference and significantly reduce the huge funding shortfall for Minnesota's transportation system.
Thank you very much. Next up, we have Peter Wagenius, followed by Joel Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Hornstein and House members. My name is Peter Wagenius, Legislative Director of Sierra Club. Because of your continued leadership on transportation, we are on the verge of a long-delayed victory. Those unfamiliar with transportation finance may be tempted to argue there's no need for ongoing revenue in the context of a surplus of one-time dollars. But as you've repeatedly discussed in this committee, transportation is not funded as other services are. It is funded separately through dedicated streams, and when it comes to transportation, there is no surplus. We also know that transit specifically is not a system you build and then look at. It's a system you must build and operate by paying drivers. Paying drivers, which is an ongoing cost, must be funded with ongoing dollars. It's not legal to pay drivers with bonds. When people suggest we should just continue to hobble along, cobbling together one-time dollars bit by bit, that's what we've been doing for decades when it comes to bus service. I wrote a column to the Star Tribune in 2019 about the impacts of state inaction on ongoing funding. We have been underinvesting on transit compared to our peer regions, putting us at a competitive disadvantage generally, and especially when it comes to attracting young workers. We have been underinvesting compared to the need on equitable access to jobs, especially for the many Minnesotans too young, too old, physically challenged, or economically distressed for whom driving a car is not an option. We have been underinvesting compared to the need on climate, as VMT increases in the metro area have far outstripped increases in population. It is appropriate to focus the metro sales tax in the metro area. When it comes to VMT increases, the metro area is the problem. It is also the solution. Finally, by supporting this bill, you will be investing in proven success. One of the reasons arterial BRT has been a proven success, the A line, the C line, the D line, is not just because they're faster and more reliable, it's because they are frequent. That frequency should be provided system-wide, not just on a few selected corridors. And that can only be achieved with ongoing dedicated revenue. Again, thank you, Chair Hornstein and House Transportation Committee for your continued leadership on this issue. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Next up, we have Joel Carlson, followed by Andrew Carlson. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to note for the record, I believe Mr. Wagenius was testifying on House File 2346. So he gave us a nice preview.
And, thank you, Mr. Chair.
I thought the testimony was excellent. So.
Mr. Carlson, please proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Joel Carlson. I own a legal research and government affairs business here in St. Paul, and I'm here on behalf of my client, Uber Technologies. We are evidently the latest tool in the toolbox. We have had a pleasant meeting with Chair Hornstein about this issue, and we understand the need for funding our transportation system. I don't know anyone that hasn't had a pleasant meeting with Chair Hornstein. But we do have a couple concerns that we want to put on the table for you and for the committee to consider. The first on page two, Mr. Chair and members, we do add now TNCs to the list of passenger transportation vehicles and exceptions, but we don't list everybody. If you look right above on lines 2.22 through 2.25, you'll see that there are other people in the passenger transportation business. We are not the only service that occupies the space. And we do have a protection in our Constitution in Article 10, Section 1, that requires you to apply taxes evenly upon everyone who is similarly situated. And so I think that this bill should be considered to be expanded to include all people, that all companies that do the work that TNCs do. And that's something that I think you should consider because we are not the only ones providing these services. As to the assessment itself, I think we can have a debate about whether it is per, you know, a flat fee or a percentage. I think that's a legitimate debate to have, and we can kind of go either way on that. I think they're both about revenue neutral relative to how it pencils out for your interests and for ours as well. On the on line 3.30, it says the transportation network company may charge a rider for the proportional share of this fee that we're being charged. I think that you, for competitive reasons, you might want to consider making that a must so that the passenger does know that they're being charged and it's not a, I'm going to charge it or I'm going to build it into my fee. So you might want to consider how that works. Just in the real world so that this government fee isn't a competitive advantage for one a company over another. On page four, there's some pretty significant reporting requirements, and just so you know, TNCs are not regulated by the state of Minnesota. Our regulations are local. We've been in Minneapolis and St. Paul and Duluth and Rochester and Moorhead. We have local ordinances that govern our services, and we don't report to the state. So this is a new requirement, a new obligation, and it comes in our read of it on 4.24 for the reporting and what would be reported to the public without a classification of the data. And so you may be requiring us to disclose what we consider to be confidential and trade secret information. And so I really think we should consider tightening that language up because we don't want, it is a competitive business. We don't want to tell the world what our rides are, how many, where our drivers are. You know, that is a problem. And then the overarching concern, members, you can't look at this in a vacuum. You know, we pay significant fees across our footprint. It costs $7 to go in and out of the Metropolitan Airport Commission. We pay a $35,000 or $40,000 licensing fee to the city of Minneapolis and St. Paul to operate our business. We've got a bill that's been heard in Chair Nelson's committee that would make these rides 50% higher than any place in the state, or excuse me, any place in the country. And so you can't just look at this in a vacuum. You've got to look at it holistically because the higher the fees, the higher the costs, you will depress demand and you will cause this business to suffer because people won't do it. They'll drive their own cars. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Next is Andrew Carlson. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the Transportation Committee. My name is Andrew Carlson with Larkin Hoffman, here testifying on behalf of Lyft. I want to start by thanking Chair Hornstein with meeting with us earlier this week. I had a very productive conversation. I will just echo a lot of what Mr. Carlson said, so I'll keep my comments brief. And that, in closing, that having spoken with the Chair, we look forward to continuing to work with him and his staff as this bill continues to work its way through the process.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chair, do you have any comments you'd like to make on the testimony? We'll move into discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm open to, making some of the tweaks that have been suggested, and I appreciate the fact that the representatives from the TNC community have been open to this idea. They're not oppositional, and so I feel that, we can move forward with, again, addressing some of the concerns.
All right. Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill seems kind of strange that it differentiates the tax rate between EVs and gas vehicles. And the biggest issue I see with that, well, one is tracking. The representative from Uber already stated, right now the state doesn't regulate them, so you're asking for a whole lot of extra information that's not currently being transmitted, which will be a cost for both the state and a major cost for the TNC. And one big issue is they already contribute heavily to our road system for the very fact that they use it, and they, they pay their cab fees, they pay the licensing fees that they already pay to the cities. They pay a lot more gas tax than the average person. And then you tax an EV at a lower rate, and they actually aren't paying their fair share if you're talking about fairness in TNC's providing funding for roads. So at this lower rate, they're also, EVs average about a 33% heavier vehicle across the board and cause more damage to the roads. So the one suggestion, well, I'd have two suggestions. The one suggestion I would say is they're making them differentiate that is an undue burden that I don't think captures what the bill is trying to do, is the equitable, like they use the roads more, therefore they should pay more, I believe is kind of the reasoning. They should be taxed the same rate, so both at 1.5, I would say. And this also hurts suburban riders, like riders from my community in particular, because most people who use these types of services in a suburban community like Blaine, they have $60, $80 trips. So this tiny fee is a lot more on them than it is for somebody who lives in a densely packed urban setting that's going on a $15 ride. That is a big issue. So I understand we're trying to find more money for roads, and you're looking at doing a litany of smaller taxes rather than just one massive one like the governor. I think we need to treat the two different vehicles fairly and not tax electric vehicles lower, because they do cause more damage to the roads, and then they also don't pay gas tax. So you're kind of leaving something off the table that I don't think is fair, and putting an undue burden on both the state, I think will be expensive to make this operate, and the TNCs in particular. And all these costs will be directly passed to consumers. So you're not really taxing Uber and Lyft. You're taxing the people who use their services. And as they mentioned, I would suggest to them that they make this a line item on every Uber and Lyft fee, DFL tax increase, 1%, 1.5%, because people will not realize, why is my Uber more expensive here than it is everywhere else in the state? And that is not right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had some similar concerns in regards to the differentiation between zero emission and others, only in the fact that in this committee for this past few years, actually, we've been trying to figure out how we can increase the funding sources for the repairs on roads and bridges. And whereas vehicles, really vehicle to vehicle to vehicle, depending on weight, produce the same damage whether you're an EV vehicle or not. If we are still looking at the fact that our fees for motor vehicles and so forth are more of a user fee than a tax, then it should be based upon their fair share of the cost of the repairs and maintenance. So that makes some sense to me. A couple of questions I have. One is, do we know if there is software available to help track that? Because I know Uber and Lyft do almost all the transactions through electronic devices. Do we know if there is software that helps them keep track of all this?
Chair Hornstein.
Thank you. I see Mr. Carlson is, I don't know if you're heading to the dais here, but I would defer to him on that. I know that it does work in other communities. So my guess is yes, but I'm no expert in this, so I'll defer to Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Carlson.
Phone a friend.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, there is technology available that we can accomplish this. Is it an extra burden? Yes, but I want you to know on your receipt that you get as a passenger and what the driver gets, you know, for the service that they're performing, we do itemize out the fees that are taken out of the passenger's fare. So this would go into that. It wouldn't be a separate line item that says, you know, this delivery fee. It would be lumped in with the fee we pay to the airport to go in and out and others. So we have the capability of doing it, not breaking it out separately. But yes, the technology is there to accomplish this.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. Thank you for that. That's helpful because I think that makes it a little bit easier for us to understand that part of it. The other question was, I think, something that you raised as well, and to Mr. Chair, why wasn't taxis and limos included? Because they also provide basically the same service, just in a slightly different format.
Chair Weinstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know I worked a little bit with Representative Cagle on this, and I'll ask her to maybe – I have a sense of this, but I wanted to see if she had Mr. Chair, if I could defer to Representative Cagle.
Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Petersburg, I think this is one of the tactics that we can take. This is one of these – this legislation is based off of what Colorado did. And Colorado did do a litany of other things as well, and had a study that looked at applying it to taxis and limos as well. And so that would be something that we could possibly work on too.
This is what they get.
Chair Weinstein.
Yeah, I will have to double check on this. I don't know for sure, but I think that there is some kind of additional tax, licensing tax, or other fees that those companies pay sales. But I don't think it's quite as an even playing field. But that's not to say that there's not a valid point here that you make, Representative Petersburg and Mr. Carlson makes. So we'll check into that. Again, this is, as Ms. Donahoe said, this is a growing trend around the country and in municipalities. It's worked. And, you know, we want to do it in a way that also works for the companies involved.
Any follow-up, Chair?
Just one. That I would just to highly, thank you, Mr. Chair, I would highly recommend looking at that because those additional fees and licensing fees and whatever it might be, if they're not earmarked targeted back to transportation, then they really aren't, that doesn't matter. These dollars should come back to the transportation funding sources if that's what you're going to be doing, is charging for the transportation. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Hudella.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to echo some of the testimony, if this does come to fruition, I do think equity is really important. It should be applied on all spaces. And I think wise for us as we talk about shortfalls in transportation on a regular basis in here, there is potentially more revenue on the table for the state, for roads and bridges and transportation, if it's applied across the board with limo services and other folks in the space. I'd also encourage just a flat fee. I see the bill as providing a lot of undue burden and complexities for the folks that are in that space if we offer this as a new revenue stream for transportation. So I think if it comes to fruition, let's make it as easy as we possibly can with the flat fee and limited reporting to the state. And just on the trade secret comment, I think makes a lot of sense. So I think whatever minimal reporting there is to the state should be highly encrypted, and there should be some safeguards for those vendors with that. So thank you.
Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just want to observe that there are a number of entities, especially large cities, New York, Boston, Los Angeles, that report very granular data from the transportation network companies, and there in fact is actually an industry standard developed originally by the City of Los Angeles for the reporting of this data. So all of that infrastructure is already in place.
Thank you very much. Closing comments, Chair Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and again thanks to the committee for your comments. I just wanted to quickly say, Representative Fidel, I do agree on a number of your comments, you know, particularly the flat fee is something I'm very seriously considering as an option here. And, you know, to Representative West, appreciate your comments as well. I don't know if this is necessarily the place where we're going to have lots of debates, I'm sure, moving forward about EVs. But my position on that is we're still in a place to incent EVs. It's one half of 1% of the fleet. And so, you know, I think there'll be a time and a place for, you know, addressing that question, but it's such a small percentage, and I think there's a lot of misinformation about the weight of EVs. Most of these are about the same. There are, of course, larger EVs that may weigh more, but, you know, Priuses, et cetera, are not causing the same type of wear and tear on the roads as larger, more traditional vehicles. So just wanted to respond on that. And again, I really appreciate the committee's comments, both sides of the aisle and the testifiers. And, you know, we'll continue to work through some of these questions as we move forward.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And with that, I renew the motion that House File 2882 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. All right, now we're going to do House File 2346, which is also Chair Hornstein. And there is a DE for this, so the DE3 to get the bill in the where the author would like it. So, Mr. Chair, would you like to author the DE3 amendment?
Thank you very much. Mr. Chair, the DE3 amendment is the 2023 version of the Metro sales tax to support transit, and I would ask the committee's consideration.
All right, any discussion on the DE3? Seeing none, all those in favor? Aye. Anyone opposed? The motion passes. We have the DE3 to us. Mr. Chair, would you please present the bill?
So thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members. This is a bill that has been before us many times, but that doesn't mean we should not go over it and have a hearing. I think I'm just going to play off of Mr. Wagenius's testimony. As for roads and bridges, we need to have dedicated long-term ongoing funding for transit. But what makes this different is that we have heard in this committee a lot of new ideas for how to modernize and improve our transit system. And so we have a slightly higher rate than in the past. And the second very significant change from previous bills is that we just said, okay, we're going to have a metro sales tax. I thought it was very important to add Section 3, which really identifies how this money will be used. And these are priorities that we have talked about in this committee, particularly last night. There are a few omissions that we'll need to add. I want to particularly note active transportation as one of them. You know, I would add that. And also, I am considering, you know, given the fact that we need that ongoing revenue for not only transit, but in the 2019 version of this bill, we had a small number for roads and bridges, and last night we heard a safety-oriented, pedestrian safety and safety-oriented bill. So I think that we might do something similar. Again, I want to discuss this with others, you know, where we sprinkle a little bit of support for the kinds of roads that are in the region that need additional support for pedestrian safety and crashes. I know we've discussed a number of those, and have a transit component to them as well. We've discussed that a little bit as well. Finally, you know, we build on Representative West's amendment last year. There was the famous West amendment to the audit last year, and so you'll see in Section 2 the existing law is the amendment that Representative West brought on the floor that I accepted last year. So we have some additional guardrails in terms of uses of the funds, particularly for Southwest. And so that's something different than we've had in the past. So that is the bill, and I look forward to the testifying and the conversation here.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. So first testifier we have is Marion Green from Hennepin County, followed by Aurora Vautrin. Oh, you don't need to run. We're not in that big of a hurry. We're doing all right.
We have a tight schedule, but not that.
Right. Yes. But please keep it to a couple minutes.
I hope I'm conveying enthusiasm.
I appreciate it. Thank you for being here. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you so much, Chair Tabke and members. My name is Marion Green. I'm the Hennepin County Commissioner for District 3, and I'm chair of the Hennepin County Regional Rail Authority. Thank you so much for the opportunity to testify today on House File 2346. Quality transit is key to building vibrant, connected communities, increasing access to jobs, reducing racial disparities, reducing congestion, combating climate change, and providing travel options for everyone. Minnesotans are spending more and more every year on their basic needs like food, housing, and transportation. Investing in quality, reliable transit options will be transformational for communities and families across the state with cost-effective options to access jobs, education, and the necessities of life. Transit's also essential to combating climate change. Transportation accounts for 25% of our state's greenhouse gas emissions, and providing alternatives to individual car use remains the most proven and impactful way of reducing these emissions. Transitway projects are generational investments in our region's transportation system that leverage billions of dollars from the federal government for Minnesota. They also employ thousands in good-paying construction jobs in the construction industry, and they ignite economic development along the corridor. Hennepin County seeks to serve our residents by investing as a partner in a comprehensive transit network with high-frequency transit way lines like light rail and bus rapid transit that meet the needs of our diverse communities. A metro sales tax means dedicated, stable funding to bring the transit systems out of a constant budget crisis and provide more equitable, efficient transit service to meet our region's needs. The sales tax should also cover operations for the entire transit system to ensure that the Met Council has financial accountability in operating decisions. We look forward to partnering to continue to build out and improve the transit system, and we support the Metro sales tax dedicated to transit. We share, regarding Southwest Light Rail, we share the frustration in the cost overruns associated with the project and appreciate the work of the legislative auditor. The OLA recommended that, quote, the legislature should create a framework in which the government entity responsible for light rail construction also bears some financial responsibility for construction costs and any potential cost increases. The OLA also recommended governance changes in the Met Council to increase accountability. The language prohibiting funding for the Southwest project does the opposite and does nothing to finish the project. It does tell communities along the corridor that have been waiting for improved transit service that they're upon in some gain. Hennepin County taxpayers have invested over $1 billion in this project, far exceeding our obligation. Now is the time for the state to step up to solve this problem. Mr. Chair and members, and Representative Hornstein, thank you for authoring this. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify on this legislation.
Thank you. Aurora Vautrin, followed by MJ Carpio. Thank you for being here. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Aurora Vautrin, and I am the legislative director for the Minnesota 100% campaign. We are a cross-sector, statewide, multiracial, intersectional campaign to build an equitable, clean energy future for everyone in Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee and staff for the opportunity to testify today. And thank you, Representative Hornstein, for your leadership on HF 2346 as amended by DE3, proposing a 3/4-cent metro area sales tax for transit. I'm going to get right to the point. $1 billion per year is the minimum we need to fix what we have and meet our state's existing transportation goals. The system we need, the one Minnesotans deserve, with readily available cleaner transit, safe streets, and maintained roads built by people who make a living wage, will cost at least $1.5 billion per year. We don't get to either of those numbers without new, dedicated, and at-scale revenue, like the metro area sales tax for transit. Without raising revenue, our transportation system will continue to deteriorate, and it will only get harder and more expensive to catch up and keep up. This is the only way to build a better connected and cleaner Minnesota, where everyone has safe, affordable, and efficient options to get where they need to go. Yes, our state has a surplus, and yes, that surplus should help fund improvements in our transportation system. But our transportation needs are ongoing and structural, which means one-time money will not solve the challenge we face. One-time money, no matter how much, does not fix years of underfunding our transit, roads, and bridges. We need a comprehensive revenue package that invests in our statewide transportation system, where we all pitch in to pay for the transportation system we all use, and a metro area sales tax for transit should be a key part. Please keep this in mind as you assemble your transportation omnibus bill. Thanks for your time and consideration.
Thank you very much. Now we have MJ Carpio. Thank you for being here. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. My name is MJ Carpio. I'm the campaign manager for Move Minnesota. We're an organization advocating for equitable and sustainable transportation systems across the state. And we're also part of the Transportation Forward Coalition, which is composed of over 40 orgs, collectively fighting for improved public transit, biking, walking, and rolling infrastructures. I'm here to support HF 2346 as amended by the chair's DE3. And in particular, the sections about the metropolitan region sales and use tax. We found from combined polling data last fall and this winter that at least one out of five Minnesotans do in fact want to use transit, biking and walking, as well as primary modes. But they feel that they can't right now because these forms of transportation aren't working as they should be. And that number increases to one out of three Minnesotans who want to switch their primary mode if it worked better. And I don't have to show you these polling data because you've heard this repeatedly from the driver's licenses for all hearings, right? And when we narrow it down to the metro area, 55% of Minnesotans do indeed support a 1 cent sales tax to fund metro area regional transit. And with that, to be transparent, I'll point out that despite my support, Move Minnesota and our partners at the Transportation Forward Coalition have been advocating for a 1 cent sales tax, but nonetheless, HF 2346 is critical. We've not seen long-term dedicated funding for public transit or, in other words, non-force car dependence forms of transportation since 2006. And this is important for the operation and maintenance cost of a built-out system, which bonding or one-time dollars just simply cannot do. Lastly, although the pockets of those outside of the metro won't be affected, we've always advocated for at least $180 million to address multimodal transit needs in greater Minnesota. Overall, this should set us on a good path to get us back on the greenhouse gas emissions reduction goals from the Next Generation Energy Act of 2007, which was actually bipartisan. So to summarize, Minnesotans want to drive less and have more transportation options, and they support raising additional revenue to make that happen. And I think that HF 2346 is a great bill to meet these multifaceted needs. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Is there anyone else that would like to testify on behalf or opposition to this bill? All right, seeing none, we'll move to discussion. Representative West.
Mr. Chair, just one thing. I want to just be clear. I didn't mean to be glib or anything. The increase is from one half to three quarters. Some people may think that is a lot. Some people may think that's little. But I just wanted to say on the record that we do have an increase from previous bills, but I've really outlined why we have that. And just wanted to be clear with the committee on that.
Got it. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Hartstein, for including the Southwest provisions. That's smart, especially with what we know about the audit that we just heard from a little bit ago. And then also, I want to thank you for including from line 6.6 to 6.8 something to go like, let's reform the Met Council here. Come on. It's a very interesting provision saying the intent of the legislature is to repeal this when there's a governance change, and I just want to commend you for continuing your quest to reform the Met Council, because that's something basically I think this entire committee shares. The main concern for the bill from my perspective in my district is one of the cities I represent is a city of less than 5,000, which has basically no bus service. They could drive down to a
park and ride and get service, but that's a little bit of a ways. But they're taxed just like somebody maybe from the southern part of Anoka County that uses transit all the time. And you look at the rest of Anoka County, because I represent almost the most southern portion, this doesn't help them much at all, yet they still have to bear the full force of the tax increase. So doing a whole metro-wide means a lot of people are going to pay this tax that don't really use the service, which isn't ideal when we talk about user fees. I would love to see it narrowed to Hennepin and Ramsey County. Those are where most of the transit users are, and those are big counties that could, as the commissioner expressed, use more transit funding. That way we can make this more targeted towards the primary users of transit, rather than including, you know, hundreds of thousands of people who don't use it very much. But those are my thank you for including those provisions, and those are my comments. Thank you.
Chair Hornstein.
Thank you very much. And I just want to address briefly a couple of your points, which are good ones. You know, on the Southwest language, you know, I've received some, and I definitely believe that we need to really focus even more than we have on this governance issue. And we do have our bill in state government. It's the bill that passed out of here. It's going to be heard there tonight. And so that hopefully will be included in our bill, that task force. You know, there is a little bit of, you know, this is both substantive and I think also sending a message that we do have to get our act together on governance, that it is in the legislature's court. This exact language we might have to play with, it's a little vague, but I think the intent is, you know, that, you know, we're not going to, you know, right away, you know, move you know, resources there. I think, you know, Commissioner Green made a good point, though, about, you know, one of the audit recommendations. There'll be other recommendations, too, and other auditor reports. So there is, I think we have to pay attention to Southwest in this bill, whether it is that this particular language or something else, that is still, you know, in discussion. But with your larger point about not using the service, I thought, is very important to address. We have to create a system, and the system means not just what we have now, but expansion, and particularly expansion into areas that don't have transit and need transit. And those are some of the places you were describing. The reason that microtransit is in this bill, and we heard the microtransit legislation, is this is particularly well-suited for suburban areas. And we've had such success with microtransit, particularly in the southern suburbs. So I envision your area really being helped by this bill in terms of the microtransit, in terms of having a better bus service and rapid bus service really throughout the region. So, you know, we are, you know, looking at, again, some of the models we used in 2019, a small percentage potentially going towards particular kind of road infrastructure in the region. Again, it's not in the bill. We're looking at that. Because of the very point that you raise, Representative West. So, again, several things still under consideration, but this is the bulk of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also want to point out real quickly on page 4 at the top, there's also a significant piece of this dedicated toward highway bus rapid transit and making sure that we are that the entire metro area is benefiting from this as it moves forward. So,
and we look at 169, we look at 55. There are a number of highways that may not even be in a particular plan now, but have been discussed and talked about. And, you know, I appreciate, Mr. Chair, you bringing that up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would like to just comment on a couple points. One, I just want to verify that the tax rate is going from 1/2 to 3/4. It's not
correct.
An additional 3/4, correct?
Yes. Well, thank you very much. That is a good, as usual, Representative Petersburg, you're asking a very important point of clarification. So what I meant to say here is that the previous bills, the bill that passed off the House floor in 2019, the bill that passed off the House floor in 2021, included a 0.5-cent increase. Those were not enacted. Those were not enacted. So what we are doing in this bill is going from adding a 3/4 cent. So I appreciate that clarification. I had meant to say that this is different from previous bills in terms of that we have an increased rate of taxation.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to follow up just on that particular point, so currently I think there is some sales tax level already. Maybe, Mr. Chair, or maybe Mr. Lee would give us, with this 3/4 percent added on, what would the new sales tax rate be for the largest tax rate in either Minneapolis or Hennepin County?
Chair Hornstein, do you want?
I think that would be appropriate for Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and Representative Petersburg, the sales tax rates are nested, including the state general levy, the legacy sales tax portion, county local option 0.5% transit and transportation taxes, and then in Minneapolis and St. Paul there's an additional 0.5% sales tax. In Hennepin County there's an additional I believe 0.15% sales tax, so I think currently that would be around 8%. And so this would be an additional 0.75.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. So that puts it close to 9% on sales tax. The other piece that I would just, you know, caution about, 4.16 through 0.18 indicates that it is intent of the legislature that would prohibit, that would eliminate the prohibition for the Southwest Light Rail. And I would just argue something for you to consider, Mr. Chair, is that whereas I know we want to help reorganize and help become more efficient, the governance of our transit system, and that you're hoping with some rework, Met Council may become more effective, and so therefore there's benefit. However, I want to remind this body that it was many years ago when this prohibition was put in place, in which this body said Southwest Light Rail had lots of problems and it shouldn't move forward till that was taken care of. It wasn't just the Met Council that pushed for it. It was also Hennepin County and CTIB and some of the others that also pushed for it and said, well, even without the state's portion, we're still going to go ahead and do it. And in my opinion, then that really, I think, provides a case for, well, then I think that should stay the same and state should not come with any more dollars for it, even with the governance change for at least this particular rail system. So food for thought, Mr. Chair.
Chair.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. And again, that law, I believe, was in 2017, if I'm not mistaken, and it capped the state share, which I think is still, there's still been very small amount of state money. I think something like $30 million has been expended so far on Southwest.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein. Next up, Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative West, I have the southern half of Anoka County. You have the northern half. But with that said, you know, you look at the map of the transit going in the North Metro, and there's a lot of space lacking, like you said. But my vision for that area is that we have those transit options and that people in, you know, Northern Blaine are able to connect to the park and ride at Northtown Transit Center and then take an express bus into the city. And so I think that's really the vision that we're going for. And not only would that, you know, help cut emissions and there'd be less traffic on 65. So thank you, Representative Chair Hornstein, for bringing this forward.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. And so we have a couple more folks who would like to speak on this bill, and then we'll go to a vote. And I just want to...
a vote on the...
Sorry, not a vote. Sorry,
yeah,
laying it over.
Laying it over, yeah.
Ending it. Thank you. Sorry. But I just wanted to let everyone know that we have another big bill after this with a significant number of testifiers. And so we do have room 200 in the SOB tonight at 6 o'clock if we don't finish things by 10 o'clock this morning. So just letting everyone know that we can come back or we can be speedy. So that's where we're at. Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Hornstein, thank you so much for bringing this bill and the really very thoughtful way you're bringing this together. I support it for all the reasons that have been discussed. I really like how you're trying to make clear that this is for the entire metro area and for a variety of different transit modes. So I think that's fantastic. And I also really appreciate the way you're thinking through what's going on with Southwest and that we need to find a responsible way forward. As a community that is served by Southwest or to be served by Southwest, I think part of that responsible way is to figuring out how that we do complete this in a responsible way. Not doing that is kind of unfathomable from a cost perspective and also from an impact that it would have on our ability to secure federal funds in the future. So I share the concern that I heard on Met Council on the structure and the need for changes there, but I really appreciate this approach of finding a path forward to get this done as well. Thank you.
Anything to add to that, Chair?
Thank you. Just before we close up this bill, I want to thank...
We have one more. We have one more.
Nothing to add to that.
Okay. Representative Hudella.
Thank you, Ms. Chair, and I'll be speedy. Nobody wants to come back. Thank you, Chair Hornstein, for bringing the bill. I especially like the Southwest Light Rail and the Met Council language. Would love to see the district positions in Met Council elected and not appointed. As far as the bill goes, it's tough to swallow a tax increase when we have a big surplus, right? And if we look at coupling that with increase in tab fees coming, we just heard about another potential new tax with Uber and Lyft. Just worried about all this combined additional tax for our folks that are trying to get around the state. I would maybe offer a suggestion. You know, this is so targeted to the metro area. To maybe get with the fiscal folks and establish or examine, what if we lowered it back to 0.5%, but we also included the Rochester and Duluth areas? We've talked a lot about future potential transit and trains and other things to those community, and I think it would maybe lessen that burden a little bit for the folks in the metro and start creating some potential revenue for future projects that do involve those larger communities within the state. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Hudella. Chair Hornstein, comments and final
yes,
comments?
Thank you very much for the consideration. That's an interesting idea. I know that they have a local option sales tax, I believe, in those counties, but I could be corrected. Again, thank you for your consideration. We've talked a lot about transit throughout the session, and you know, I'll just harken back to a community meeting I went to in St. Cloud a number of years ago where someone said, what good is a job if you can't get there? And transit is a ticket to prosperity. Transit is the way we lift people into a better life. We connect communities. We can do nothing better for equity, nothing better for transit in this committee, or for climate in this committee. Than supporting transit. And this is a new approach. It's a 21st century approach. We really are creating a system with so many modes of transit. I think we're really focusing on ways that are efficient and get people to where they need to go and lift people into a better life, safer and in a way that I think really promotes a much better community. And so I appreciate the committee's support. I appreciate the testifiers. And we'll move forward, and this is why we have hearings, to hear what people are looking at. And again, I think transit operations is something that needs to be covered as well in this bill and put forward, and so we'll be looking at that as well. So with that, I move to lay this bill over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I renew the motion that House File 2346, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Now we're going to move on to House File 580 with Representative Cagle, and we'll do a switch up here.
All right, we'll commence with, I think, the the main attraction, House File 580. I keep doing that. House files have become highways lately. House File 580, and I will emphasize again, it's been the custom and usage in this committee that everybody gets to put their opinions forward, whether you're committee members or members of the public. And so we'll try to move quickly, but again, as Vice Chair Tabke mentioned, we do have the option to return after session, which we will exercise to make sure all voices are heard. So, Representative Cagle, would you like to move House File 580?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move that House File 580 be laid over for possible inclusion. And I would also like to move the A4 amendment.
We have an A4 author's amendment before us. Could you orient us on the A4?
Sure. So the A4, would change the fee from a 40-cent.
Oh, I think you're having the same issue I did in terms of moving the mic closer.
Oh. There you go. Is that all right? Okay. I didn't want to, in my vision. What it would do is it would change it from a 40-cent phase-in 50 to a 75-cent with no phase-in. It would move the effective date to July, and it would also establish a food delivery support account, and then it would be dedicated funding 45% to the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, 24% to large city assistant account, 19% to small city assistance accounts, and then 11% to town roads account. And then there's also a $25 million appropriation from the Trunk Highway Fund for intersection conversion projects, specifically Highway 65.
Thank you very much. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just quickly, so with the original presentation of the bill till now, that amount has been almost doubled. What led you to increasing it to almost double what it was originally?
Chair Cagle.
Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg. So with the full phase-in, it would have been 50 cents. So we brought it up 25 cents. But the reason is the need. We've been hearing clearly from advocates. I've served on this committee all four terms that I've been here, and I haven't yet heard the advocates say that the needs have been met. And so, one of the things that we need to start looking at is creative new ways to generate revenue. And so that's why we went with the increase.
And just before you get started and we incorporate the amendment, I wanted to just announce to the committee and the public that there are more letters that both for and against House File 580 that are posted online. Unfortunately, they came in later, so we weren't able to print them. So you can find them online, and they will be entered into the record. So with that, are there any other questions on the amendment? Okay. Okay, all those in favor of the A4 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the motion prevails. And now we have House File 580 as amended before us.
Thank
Chair
you.
Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So I've kind of been affectionately calling this bill my Taylor Swift anti-hero bill because it's me. I'm the problem. This bill is really based off of something that Colorado did. And like I said, the four terms that I've served on transportation, the needs have not changed, and in fact, they've just gotten worse. And so, I think all of us agree that we do need to get some new revenue into our system. I think Representative Petersburg, you had mentioned that during one of the bills previously. In the past, we've really only looked at these kind of two options: dedicating 100% of the auto part sales tax, or increasing gas tax. And so today I'm really just asking that we take a look at a new idea. And so instead of trying to make the same old arguments and push the same old ideas forward, that we look at something new. And so really, I was kind of doing some back of the napkin math here and thinking about looking at my Amazon list and orders and stuff. And I don't know, I'm kind of ashamed to say it, but we probably have about 5 deliveries to my house every week. And so that would be about $195 over the course of a year. Since I've put this piece of legislation in, I have actually tried to change my behavior. And instead of just going, put it in the cart, buy, or do the buy now thing, I'll put it in the cart, you know, wait a day, put something else in the cart. And then, so instead of having 5 deliveries a week, I'll get 1 delivery a week. And if I were to change my behavior then from 5 deliveries a week to 1 delivery a week with the 75-cent fee, this would cost me $39 a year. I also have been dealing with a flat tire on my car. My winter tires blew a hole in them, and I had to bring it in to get it patched. And the average repair of a flat tire is about $30 to $60. You know, you go into the tire shop, and they tell you, oh, we can't just replace one, or we can't patch this because of something, something, something. So a basic set of tires is, you know, $139, $400 per tire. And so if I didn't have to get my tires fixed and changed because of that flat, I would be much happier. So, you know, this is really just kind of trying to figure out new ways, and I'm willing to work on this and hear ideas on how we can make it better. And so with that, Mr. Chair, I will turn it over to the testifiers.
Okay. Thank you so much. Our first testifier is Pat Benner from AFSCME. Please state your name for the record and please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. For the record, my name is Pat Benner. I'm a legislative representative with AFSCME Council 5. I appreciate you all hearing my testimony today. I'm here to express our support for House Files 580 and 2882. It is vital that the legislature actively work to raise dedicated revenue for transportation. I don't want to belabor the point that everyone else, I imagine, is going to say that we need to increase dedicated revenue to maintain our roads and bridges. But I just want to say that we need this revenue within MnDOT because service levels are suffering, particularly in recruitment and retention of frontline workers, snowplow drivers. This has primary and secondary effects that ultimately lead to worse service levels for the public and increased costs to the taxpayers, and I'll attempt to explain quickly. For years, MnDOT has had difficulties getting an adequate number of plow drivers out of frontline highway workers. There simply aren't enough TGs, transportation generalists, folks that do maintenance on, you know, guardrails, potholes, snow and ice removal to keep the plows filled. And current incentives to hop into a plow outside of your shift is currently 65 cents an hour. These are frontline maintenance workers that are paid the lowest among our bargaining units at MnDOT, and in recent years, their CDL is frankly a much more valuable commodity at other employers. You know, I could point to the Teamsters contract at the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport, but also counties, cities, and the private sector all vastly surpass what is available to MnDOT plow drivers. Now, because there aren't enough TGs and there isn't much of an incentive to volunteer to plow snow, MnDOT has to put TGSs, generalist seniors, these are leads, foremen, inspectors, and transportation specialists, TSs, surveyors, inspectors, material lab workers, designers, and then heavy equipment mechanics into plows and mandate that they maintain a CDL. Many of these workers have advanced degrees, and many more did not seek employment with MnDOT to plow snow. In years past, this might have worked all right as a stopgap, but today this has just led to an exodus of these workers. For instance, one of our member leaders in the Winona area, an inspector, can take a job with the City of Rochester or Olmsted County and get paid up to $18 an hour more than what he is currently topped out at, and he wouldn't have to plow snow at all. Folks are being offered better paying jobs without the requirements to plow snow, and they are taking them. We feel that,
Mr. Benner, if you could wrap up.
I'll go quick. If they're able to increase compensation to generalists to ensure that workers with CDLs are genuinely valued as employees of the state and provide significantly better incentives to workers that plow snow, they will be able to recruit and retain quality candidates again. There are not people beating down the doors to work at MnDOT like there were 10, 15 years ago. It's now, you know, at best a one-to-one applicant to opening position. we are just having significant issues finding quality candidates and getting them working. I'll also just say this has issues in the summer for construction projects as well as other stuff. If you look at TTAA reports, a law implemented in 2009, you'll see that MnDOT has, for every single project valued over $100,000, outsourced it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Benner.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Next, we have Bentley Graves from the Chamber. And again, I'll just remind people to keep within the limits that were communicated to you for this hearing. Time limits for testimony. Welcome, Mr. Graves.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Bentley Graves from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I want to thank Representative Cagle for her openness on this bill throughout session. She's been very approachable and has been open to suggestions and helping to find answers to questions about this approach, given that it is a new idea, she said. And so I just want to thank her for the time she's put into this. I just want to echo something that actually Representative West mentioned earlier. When we're thinking about ensuring that this segment of the economy, this kind of the e-commerce segment of the economy, contribute to our transportation infrastructure, I think it's important to remember that these deliveries are made in vehicles that are already paying the fuel tax and or the EV fee if they're electric vehicles that currently exist. They're paying TAB fees, and they're paying the motor vehicle sales tax when that vehicle is purchased. So these vehicles that are delivering the purchases that are using the infrastructure are paying to support the infrastructure today. Having said that, I understand that there is an interest in having, again, this segment of the economy, e-commerce segment of the economy, contribute more to our transportation infrastructure. But I would submit that while this is certainly one new idea as a way to do that, it may not be the only one. And there's been made mention of the significant surplus that we have in the state of Minnesota this year. And I think one other way to do this is to look at similar to what we're talking about doing with the sales tax on auto parts, taking a portion of the statewide sales tax that's already levied on online purchases and has been since 2018, and using that to help fund transportation and ensure that, again, this segment of the economy, this e-commerce segment of the economy, is contributing to our infrastructure. That's a way to, again, ensure these dollars are flowing in from this economic activity without increasing the burden on consumers that, as we heard earlier, especially the metro area, is quickly approaching without this, 9% of purchases. So something to consider. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity. I know there's a lot of other people testify, and I'll leave it at that. Happy
Thank you
questions.
So much. Appreciate it. Next, we have Abby Brydeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. For the record, my name is Abby Brydeck, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Asphalt Pavement Association. As many of you know, the gas tax is the workhorse of our road and bridge funding system, yet its purchasing power has been drastically reduced through the last decades due to lack of inflationary increases. I realize this bill is not about gas tax, but I can't help myself, so I just will say one more thing about the gas tax. In 1988, we raised the gas tax from 17 to 20 cents. Then again, we raised it in 2008 from 20 to 25 cents. Those 20 cents per gallon in 1988 should be 52 cents per gallon today for equal purchasing power, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor and Statistics. Yet we remain at 25 cents while construction inflation is soaring. The reality is that we aren't maintaining our current funding sources, and we must look to alternative ones. According to the World Economic Forum, there will be over 30% more delivery vehicles on the roads, delivering 78% more packages by 2030. In addition to increasing traffic congestion and wear and tear on the highways, roads, and streets, this will increase motor vehicle-related emissions of air pollutants. Charging a delivery fee may encourage trucks to consolidate trips, and in fairness, larger delivery vehicles do more damage to the roads they travel. Consumers would also be encouraged to bundle their purchases to avoid multiple fees. This is a simple, easy-to-administer fee that would be collected and remitted to the Department of Revenue, just like the sales tax, while providing badly needed revenue to our transportation system. Finally, it may seem self-serving to hear our road construction industry group advocating for more public funding, but it doesn't just benefit us. When contractors have reliable and predictable funding, they are able to plan ahead with workforce and capital investments, giving the state the best pricing they can. As we like to say, we all do better when we all do better. Thank you for considering my testimony today, and please support this proposal.
Thank you, Ms. Breiter. Next, we have J.J. Haywood from Pizza Luce. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is J.J. Haywood, and I'm the CEO of Pizza Luce. We have 9 full-service restaurants in the Twin Cities and Duluth. This month, we are proud to celebrate our 30th year in business. Since our founding, a core feature of our brand is free delivery to our guests. Implementing House File 580 would break this aspect of our business, and we would lose a key differentiator, free delivery, vis-a-vis our biggest competitors, mobile app delivery companies. If passed, House File 580 would have a much larger impact on restaurants than you probably may have intended. This fee is regressive, impacting our guests and delivery employees. For example, this fee does not flex with the order value. While 75 cents may not seem like a lot, it is significant. Last week, 42% of our deliveries were for $25 or less. This 75-cent fee would add an additional 3% of the purchase price in taxes on each of these orders. We have many guests who are unable to leave their homes due to disability. They order multiple times per week as we provide free delivery of inexpensive, healthy food options. This fee will add up for these guests. How is it fair that a delivery of a $3,000 bike or couch or washing machine in a 10-ton box truck pays the same fee as an $11 hoagie sandwich delivered in a 3,000-pound compact car or EV vehicle? Guests will be confused about the fee, and driver tips will be jeopardized when guests assume the fee pays for delivery service. Please consider the wider impact of this bill, especially with other business mandates the legislature is considering. We can only handle so much as we rebuild our restaurants from COVID. Thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Next, we have Jennifer Schoenzeit.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I am Jennifer Schoenzeit. I own Zips Liquor Store in Minneapolis. Zips is an independent, second-generation, family-run liquor store, retailers, and small business. I'm here as the past president of the Minnesota Liquor and Beverage Association, which has members including small independent bars, restaurants, liquor stores across the state. I'm here to testify to oppose the Bill 580, which adds a 75-cent tax to each delivery. In addition to the Minnesota Liquor and Beverage Association, other groups represented small business oppose this legislation, including Hospitality Minnesota, the Grocers Associations, and Retail Associations. This is quite unique that we all agree on one thing. I realize this is a transformation committee. I am normally testifying on the liquor issues in the Commerce Committee, but this is an issue that may affect small businesses and, frankly, our customers after the entire hospitality industry in Minnesota during COVID shutdown and have responded to customer demands and now are delivering products and are using third-party deliveries. My store is also considering a third-party delivery right now. House File 580 delivers tax that is unnecessary and hindering to small businesses and will generally hurt consumers and their increasing demand for delivery. It establishes a regressive fee that's negative impact on all Minnesota and places a burden particularly on small business. The bill is assigned responsibility to the retailers to collect and remit the fee. Retailers will need to substantially invest in resources to comply with these fees. Therefore, there is no support to their administration. Some businesses use delivery as a minor component to their business model, in which it would not be economical for them to operate and implement a fee. I fear that big box stores will once again win the day and expense to small and pop retailers under this bill. Furthermore, there's no opportunity to allow retailers to elect to pay the delivery for themselves. In addition, there are major unanswered questions in this bill, such as currently amending how uncertain transactions will intersect, including sales that are business-to-business or wholesale, such as beer delivery from wholesalers, for example. These definitions are not explicitly addressed in the bill, nor does the bill provide direct or curbside pickup, in-store pickup, related to those options being considered. Our retail counterparts in the state of Colorado reported just months after the fee began political herd blowback from consumers, and while campaigns and reconstruction of the bill is being considered, including exemptions of small business and removal of all specific reporting lines, consumers. In addition, the lawsuit challenges the fees in the courts. Most important, the proposed fee would also come at a time when consumers and small businesses can least afford it. Economists warn us of maybe a recession in our future.
If you could wrap up soon, that would be helpful. Thank you, Jennifer.
Yep. I think that Minnesota small business hospitality would consumer and deserve better and a better way to funding the bridges. I urge you to oppose House File 580. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Next, we have Corey Marshall.
Good afternoon, Chairman and distinguished members of the committee. My name is Corey Marshall, and I serve as the Director of State and Local Government Relations for the Chamber of Progress. We urge your committee to strongly oppose 580, which would create the country's highest tax of its kind, significantly increasing the financial burdens on consumers and businesses. I heard Colorado mentioned earlier, and I'd want the committee to know that there's been significant fallout in the business community, the small business community, and the state of Colorado. Many families work in long hours, students, elderly people, the disabled community, and those living in rural and remote localities depend on affordable and accessible delivery services for prescriptions and other essentials. Some may believe that delivery services are a luxury convenience, but for a growing number of Minnesotans, they have become a necessity. And as someone who grew up in a struggling community, a low-income community, I know what a necessity is or versus a convenience. This is not a convenience for the single mother looking to get milk to her children. It's not a convenience for a senior citizen looking to get things delivered to them when they don't have family to do it. And it's certainly not a convenience or a luxury for folks living in food deserts. Now, I've heard that some of us have had 5 deliveries per week, but for some folks living in this, for a lot of folks living in Minnesota, they barely can get one delivery to their homes. They barely could afford one delivery to their homes. The rising cost of food and other necessities falls especially hard on lower income households. Imposing delivery taxes not only creates a regressive tax on poor communities, but also limits opportunities for gig workers who are highly represented in that community. Minnesotans cannot afford an extra tax on deliveries during these times of rising inflation, crippled supply chains, and economic uncertainty. This is especially true for seniors, as I've mentioned, the disabled community, and underprivileged populations living, again, in food deserts who are most likely to rely on grocery delivery. Finally, a delivery tax which would discourage deliveries, encourage more people to get in their car to pick up products, further increasing road use and greenhouse gas emissions. A delivery truck can drop off 20 deliveries in a 2-hour period. If those folks aren't if folks aren't logging onto their phones to order delivery services, that'll put 20 to 40 more people in that 2-hour period on Minnesota roads. If signed into law, Minnesotans would pay the highest delivery tax in the country. Now, I've always known Minnesotans to be a leader in every endeavor. Do we want to be a leader in taxing our communities, our low-income communities? I don't think so. We strongly urge you to oppose HF 580 and instead prioritize lifting up the most vulnerable populations while supporting economic growth and opportunity for all Minnesotans. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Next, we have Margaret Donahoe from the Transportation Alliance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Margaret Donahoe, Director of the Minnesota Transportation Alliance. And I'd like to thank Representative Cagle for working with us on this legislation. You know, there's no silver bullet or panacea when it comes to paying for our roads, bridges, and transit systems. every idea, every option over the years that we have come up with has faced some kind of criticism. One is too regressive, one is too expensive, one supposedly takes money from other areas of the government. You can't raise revenue when there's a budget deficit, and you can't raise revenue when there's a budget surplus. There's never the right moment to fund our transportation system. We've been accused of focusing too much on the gas tax. We don't have new ideas. So now we have a new idea. And it's easy to criticize. But the bottom line is transportation infrastructure has to be paid for one way or another. We think that this could be part of the comprehensive omnibus transportation funding package to provide another option. Colorado passed a comprehensive package that will raise $5.4 billion over the next 10 years through a combination of general fund transfers and new fees on gasoline, diesel, electric vehicles, residential deliveries, and rideshare trips. The fee in this bill is charged once per delivery if an order contains a taxable item. As you've heard, it doesn't matter the size of the order, so it does encourage people to bundle their orders, bundle their trips, minimize the wear and tear on our roads, and reduce emissions. The new revenue source also has more flexibility than traditional sources that are dedicated to the HUTDF. As you've seen in this bill, the revenue can be directed specifically to county highways, city streets, township roads, to help reduce the burden on the local property tax, which is not related to the use of roads. So one way or another, the cost of fixing our roads and bridges has to be paid for. The transportation funding shortfall is so large that no one revenue option can begin to put a dent in the backlog of projects. We need ongoing dedicated revenue sources that will allow the state to maintain and repair the thousands of miles of roads and thousands of bridges needed for the movement of people and goods. We urge the committee to include this delivery fee in the omnibus transportation funding package.
Thank you, Ms. Donahoe. Next, we have Rob Williams, and then I'll say who's on deck to move things along. Bruce Newstead after that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Rob Williams. I'm the Director of Information Technology at Devani's Incorporated. We are a local family-owned restaurant chain that has been doing business in the Twin Cities since 1975. I am here to testify in opposition to House File 580. The following are just some of our concerns with the proposed 75-cent tax on each delivery we fulfill. Devani's utilizes both third-party delivery facilitators and our own delivery drivers. It isn't clear which entity will be responsible for collecting and remitting these fees. The flat fee is not based on the order total. We deliver orders anywhere from $15 to $1,000, so our customers will be disproportionately burdened by this. The bill states the fee must not be included in the sales price for calculating tax owed and be shown as separate from any other delivery fee. There will be costs incurred by us as retailers to implement this into point of sale and accounting systems, as well as administrative costs to accurately account for, audit, and remit these fees. If passed, will there be resources available to help us and other small businesses with administrative costs? We strive for efficiency when executing deliveries and would have one delivery driver take two orders to the same neighborhood on the same run. If both households came to us instead, the usage of the same roadways would be doubled. Given that need for efficiency, retail delivery actually reduces the usage of roadways. Lastly, there's no consideration for axle weight, yet axle weight is definitely a factor in how much a vehicle deteriorates a roadway. I strongly urge you to consider the full impacts of HF 580. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much. We'll have Bruce Newstead and then Chris Fredson. And members, I think that we want to leave enough time for all the testifiers and to have some committee discussion. So I think we'll be coming back after session. So please proceed with your testimony, and then we'll have Chris Fredson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Bruce Newstead with the Minnesota Retailers Association. I'll be excessively brief toward your goal of trying to get through everybody. I just want to point out in the packet there's a multi-page letter from 12 organizations. We actually added the Beer Wholesalers and the Pharmacists Association after the committee deadline in opposition to this bill. And again, I want to make a point that Mr. Graves made. There's certainly a case for talking about transportation. This just feels like the right, not the right mechanism to implore to generate funds. And I think you've heard some good arguments relative to impacts on consumers. And I will say every one of my members that I've talked about, large, medium, small, have said, you know what, first and foremost, I'm worried about the impact on the consumer. And as retailers, we're really sensitive, price sensitive, relative to competition, but also people's budgets. I think you heard a great talking point on inflation and where things are from a Minnesota family budget right now. And well, sometimes legislator will say to me, well, you know what, the session doesn't impact the business. And I've heard arguments that it does, because obviously there's an operational impact. There's a cost to systems. The true impact is really on the consumer. And I think this is a time when consumers can't necessarily afford this type of approach. So I just want to point out the letter in your packet. There are actually 36 kind of unanswered questions there. And I will say thank you, Representative Cagle, for sitting down and talking about this bill. We look forward to talking about it more. But there's 36 really important questions there that we've tried to really dig into and say, okay, what about this doesn't work? And I will be honest, Mr. Chair, some of those questions I think are insurmountable. So I'd encourage the committee to really think about what's the process for looking at transportation funding moving forward. And I'd say this is not one that works for consumers. It's not one that works for Minnesota businesses and has deep implications on our disabled and our elderly. And I'll just end with, during the pandemic, we asked retailers to pivot. We asked retailers that hadn't figured out delivery before to figure out delivery now. And in doing so, they made a lot of investments in those processes. And we'd hate to see those investments go to waste by what is essentially sort of a behavior-modifying tax, not a fee, but a tax on the Minnesota consumer. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much. We'll conclude here with Chris Fredson. If Jamie Poole is available this evening, that would be great. Otherwise, we might be able to get him in quickly. Mr. Fredson, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein, Lead Petersburg, and members of the committee. My name is Chris Fredson. I'm Director of Public Affairs for La Una, Minnesota, and North Dakota. We are proud to represent more than 13,000 skilled construction laborers who build and maintain our roads, bridges, and transit, including members in orange here at this hearing today. We want to thank Representative Cagle for authoring House File 580 and Chair Hornstein for authoring House Files 2882 and 2346. Along with other bills that create new long-term and dedicated revenue for transportation infrastructure, this legislation will make our members safer, help create family-supporting construction careers, and help us fix, catch up, and keep up our roads, bridges, and transit in every corner of the state. As you know, Minnesota is facing a $30 billion funding gap just to maintain our current system of state-county highways, local roads, bridges, and transit over the next 20 years. Our crumbling infrastructure is an increasing threat to the health, safety, and prosperity of all Minnesotans. We have more than 600 structurally deficient bridges and thousands of miles of roads in poor condition. Our roads are graded a D+, bridges a C, transit a C-. Specifically to House File 580, the Amazon delivery fee is a common sense way to pay for our roads and bridges. Consider the wear and tear that delivery trucks are doing to our infrastructure. Understand that as a consumer, the alternative to a delivery would mean spending an equal or greater amount of time and money going to the store. Let's be honest, we don't get what we don't pay for, and that is the reason our roads and bridges are falling apart and our transit is facing a fiscal cliff. The problem is that 92% of road and bridge funding in Minnesota comes from constitutionally dedicated funding sources that are coming in under forecast, or in the case of the gas tax, beginning in 2025, is going to bring in less revenue. Even with 100% dedication of the sales tax and auto parts and repairs, we will not meet the need. We need new revenue to make roads, bridges, and transit safer for our members and all Minnesotans. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Fredson. I do believe we have time for Jamie Poole, and that would conclude our public testimony. Thank you. We didn't really want to make you come back. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you so much, Chair Hornstein. And I was told 90 seconds, so I am on it. Members of the committee, my name is Jamie Poole, President of the Minnesota Grocers Association. I'm here to respectfully oppose House File 580. This conversation is important and has real consequences. Our membership consists of hundreds of grocers and convenience stores, many of whom are independent, multi-generational, and locally owned. We have over 300 members with 1,300 locations statewide. The bill as amended would create a 75-cent fee on nearly every retail delivery in the state. The bill language implies that non-taxable food items would be exempt, but if a transaction includes a single taxable item, the fee would be applied. Many common and essential items in your local grocery store are taxable. This will pose great confusion for our customers, requires a commitment to educating component of this bill if it advances. Access to food is critically important. During the pandemic, delivery became the only option for many Minnesotans. As a direct result, grocery delivery has remained popular. In a recent survey, 1 in 6 consumers said they purchase groceries online and have them delivered to their homes weekly. This service is extremely convenient and in some cases necessary, particularly for elderly and homebound customers. In 2022, 435,000 Minnesotans were recipients of SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. There are questions regarding these transactions and a fear that this new fee will become a barrier for recipients. This proposal requires significant investment to update point-of-sale systems to track and collect this new pass-through fee. There is no provision for upfront or ongoing costs. The E911 TAM pass-through fee is similar, and retailers retain 3% of the combined fee for administration. This deserves consideration. We thank Representative Cagle for her meeting with us, but we do feel there are significant questions about the functionality of this bill and consequences for all Minnesotans. Thank you for making time for me.
Thank you for your testimony. We'll allow the author to make a couple of comments, and then members, we have a lot to discuss, and so we'll announce the room for the evening session before we adjourn. Chair Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. So, again, you know, there is no, like Ms. Dunhoe said, there's no silver bullet. And so, you know, this, one of the testifiers said this isn't the right mechanism, but, you know, we haven't really had any ideas besides gas tax and out-of-park sales tax, and there seems to be opposition to those as well. And so, you know, we're really working to work through this piece of legislation. There is another amendment in the works where we're looking at things like a small business exemption. And I did go through that list of questions as well that that one of the testifiers talked to. And so we are working through that list. I want to commit to everybody that I want to make sure that, you know, this, if passed, is as implementable as possible and really has a big effect. I think one of the things that we have to, you know, food is exempt and prescriptions would be exempt. And, you know, if our roads aren't working, if goods can't get to people's homes, it doesn't really matter how much you order because, you know, we need the our transportation system is kind of like our lifeblood here, and we need to make sure that we're taking good care of it. And so, as I said, this is just one of those ideas that I think is new, and I really hope that we can work through it and get behind it. So I look forward to more discussion this evening.
Thank you. So I just want to make, again, before we recess, I wanted to also, if there's anyone in the public that wants to testify that wasn't given, had the opportunity to testify, we will start with any additional testimony at 6 p.m. And we will then have committee discussion at that time. And I don't know how long our session is going to go, so stay tuned for announcements. But the room number is SOB 200. Representative Petersburg?
No, I was a question I was asking. If it runs long, you'll notify us on the floor.
Correct. And then look at your emails or pay attention to floor announcements. But for now, we are in recess until 6 p.m. tonight, tentatively, at SOB 200, reconvening in the SOB at 200. Thanks, members. We're in recess.